Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Understeer podcast, where today we've got your very special guest, Twitch streamer, YouTuber, podcaster, amongst other things. Welcome to the podcast, ProJennifer. How are you today?
Thank you very much. Very well. Looking forward to the Australian Grand Prix coming up. Life is good. How are you?
Good. A bit cold. Could be a bit warmer. But other than that, I have no complaints.
Well, yeah, I'll wish the same, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's the first podcast I was saying to you earlier, Steve, since the start of the season. And the first race has been pretty good season so far, for two races.
I think we're having a great season. I think we're in for a really interesting season as it goes on, because these new cars have really, I don't know, kind of completely spiced up the on-track action. You know, we're getting some fantastic racing with Leclerc and Verstappen, two different cars, but pretty much there with each other throughout. Interesting to see certain teams struggling. I'm sure there's one that stands out to everyone, Mercedes.
Yeah.
I was genuinely surprised of all the teams to sort of get it wrong. I don't know about you, but I certainly didn't have Mercedes down as being that team to get it wrong this year.
Yeah, no, I think with Mercedes, I mean, last year, I mean, as we always start the year on top, not the back third, but like, and being a little bit worse than you might expect them. And obviously last year they were neck and neck with Red Bull, whether that's Mercedes getting back or Red Bull, looking forward to those Reds last year. But again, Mercedes weren't up there in my list. I would have had Red Bull more down as Justin back than Mercedes.
Yeah, absolutely. And yet we now find ourselves in an intriguing situation where, to be honest, all the Mercedes powered cars as well struggling this year. But yeah, the 8 times constructors champions in a row are, you know, a sort of head of the midfield, so to speak. It's going to be interesting. I think because there's another gentleman that obviously I do a podcast with that you know, Mr. Pulsar Man, John Sweeney. And he had a theory that there may well be some inherent design problem with the engine in terms of the center of gravity that's not helping the balance of the cars. I found that quite a fascinating take. But I don't think any of us predicted this year. And what we were kind of saying is that we're kind of back in that era where these cars are so intricately linked into the way that the floor is designed and the limitations that they've put on the cars, that we're probably going to see like the era of the, you know, the B-spec cars sort of come back, where, you know, we've had teams start to see like Aston Martin, how bad their car has been from the start of the season. That really, you know, it's going to have to be big changes that happen because they're going to have to change large elements of the car. It's not just like the seasons that we've just had where it's just, oh, we'll just add a wing in here and a barge board here. You know, that's all gone now. It's going to be interesting to see if anyone does sort of go down the route of just basically bringing out a B-spec car, which we used to have back in like the 90s. Quite a lot of times in the 90s, in fact. But it'll be interesting to see. I made a bold prediction last year about, it was actually to do with Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton. But I actually predicted last year that if Lewis didn't win the 2021 World Championship, I said he'll never win another World Championship. And at the moment, the prophecy is holding true.
Perhaps. This is another idea. Maybe Mercedes has taken a Rich Energy sponsorship and it's dropped them down the grid.
The Rich Energy sponsorship, yeah. Yeah.
Well, they seem to constantly be coming back into F1 if you look at their Twitter.
Yeah. Do you know, Rich Energy was always a weird one, because I know they've still got a, is it a British Superbikes team they actually are invested in or something?
I don't know if they still sponsor or not, but yeah.
Rich Energy were kind of a curse, to be honest. I mean, we saw what happened to Haas, and now they're the phoenix rising from the ashes, which I've got to say, they are probably the team I'm absolutely rooting for this year. You know, with Gunther and Kevin Magnussen back in the car, and, you know, you got Mick Schumacher, unfortunately, a huge accident last time. Thankfully, he's okay. But Kevin Magnussen has been an absolute standout since coming back. And I don't know if you've sort of seen Kevin Magnussen, but for me personally, he seems to have matured a lot since the last time he was in.
He's definitely a lot less aggressive than.
I don't know whether it's because we picked up on the fact he's had a daughter, hasn't he? A little girl whilst he's been away. I don't know whether that sort of calms people down, brings a new perspective, but yeah, he definitely seems, I don't know, just much more settled, calmer. You know, he's happy and smiley on the grid, happy to talk to all of the, you know, sort of the pundits like your Ted Kravitzes and all that lot. Yeah, it's nice. It's good. I mean, I'm glad he's back. I felt he still had something to offer in Formula One, but, you know, likewise, I still think Nico Hülkenberg has a lot to offer the world of F1, but,
I think I was trying to disagree on Hülkenberg. I think Hülkenberg had a chance. He's had so many races. I mean, he blew the podium quite a few times. I mean, the most recent one, yeah. I think there are younger drivers out there. He deserved more of a chance than Hülkenberg, in my opinion. Hülkenberg's a very quick guy, but I just think that there are younger people who deserve the chance to show that maybe they can do better than what Hülkenberg. Like, Piastri is obviously the one that stands out. One Formula 3 and Formula 2 successive years, and people like Charles Leclerc and George Russell, and they're pretty good, and he can't even get through.
Yeah. I mean, Oscar Piastri was case in point, you know, Formula 2 champion, and he's had to settle for reserve driver at Alpine, and I kind of hoped that Piastri would be one of the drivers that actually got a race seat this year, but obviously it wasn't to be. We saw the Alfa Romeo squad, they picked up Joe, however, I think Crofty was pronouncing it Joe, but
I think it is Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to go with that. You know, he's done okay. But
I remember his first year Formula 2, he was very exciting. He was the best rookie, but he sort of never kicked on from there. He always stepped away from that and starts well. He sort of never kicked on where there are other drivers, maybe a few months, who maybe struggled in their first sort of year, and then they sort of start to kick on later on. We've seen the same in his
like when you're saying obviously about the second season kicking on, I mean, Mick Schumacher, I think, is probably the best example, because his first year and everything, he's sort of taken the time to get used to the car, learn about it all. And then the second season has been, you know, well, as we've seen, his championship year in the junior categories. I still think it's a shame that we've got this sort of, I don't know, mentality in F1 that these super talented guys coming up through the junior ranks don't get a true shot at getting a race seat. And it's just the way F1 is. Even with the budget cap now, it's still, you know, still going to be money orientated to a large degree. But it's a shame, because Oscar Piastri was awesome last year. And I was kind of, you know, like I was saying, I was kind of excited to see him behind the wheel of an F1 car driving it in anger. And I'm hoping we're going to get to see him at least in a number of free practice sessions this year for Alpine, because I'd like to see how he stacks up against the likes of Esteban Ocon, you know, and Fernando, who are the regular drivers in that car. I'd love to see what kind of lap times he can put in, given the chance.
I think with Piastri, he's not necessarily like the most exciting of racing, a racing driver. He's very, very quick over that sort of time, which I think that would actually make him a very good Formula One driver. I think it's a good sign. I mean, supposedly he's meant to replace Alonso when Alonso supposedly retired at the end of this year, but yeah, I think we'll see Alonso staying on longer potentially. And then there's not really anywhere for Piastri to go unless Red Bull drops the mode and then decides they want to have Piastri over someone like Lawson or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, Red Bull, they've obviously got some exciting drivers coming up. I've been sort of doing some watch-alongs on Twitch of the Formula 2 races this year. And like you say, they've got, you know, they've got Liam Lawson in their stable. They've also got that, chap Iwasa, who's in there now as well. And that guy can overtake, as we saw, like he worked his way up from the back of the grid a number of times, after his awful qualifying session where he was the first driver to officially have an accident in a proper session.
He had a few wins last year in Formula 3 as well. He was similar to, Ollie Goldman, I think he's an MP race sport now. They both got breaks in Formula 3, so, yeah, they're both doing all right.
I kind of hope, like, yeah, like I say, you know, I like Nico, but like you say, he's getting older and we've got these young, exciting drivers. I mean, I kind of predict that at the end of the season, we may well see Vettel and Alonso both retire, which that would open up two seats on the F1 grid, which, you know, they're not seats to be sort of sniffed at either. They're pretty decent seats. I still think that Alpine should get hold of Pierre Gasly.
I agree.
I mean, we've had this chat in Twitch before, haven't we, about Gasly? Yeah. And I think that he would be, I think he's at a stage now where he kind of needs that step up now from the AlphaTauri, you know, getting the chance to lead for all intents and purposes a manufacturer team would be the next natural progression, I think, for him at this stage.
Some more pairing of Ocon and Alonso, if they get a new contract, it's pretty good.
I mean, what do you make of Ocon? Because for me, he seems a bit inconsistent. He'll produce some good races and then other races, just he'll be nowhere.
I would agree with that sort of assessment. I think I'm slightly biased towards Ocon because I think Ocon is sort of the only guy in the Formula One grid who sort of comes from relative nothing in terms of wealth. And I think he's had to work his way up. I think, you know, he got that win last year. He is getting there as a driver. Maybe potentially just had any why he's racing Alonso, if that's his fault or not, in the last one, too, what all that was about the Alpine. But I do agree he could be a bit more consistent. There are times when he's sort of just trundling around the back of the grid. Sort of like a worse version of Bottas.
I just want to see Ocon more consistent, but more consistent towards his good performances. You know, I want him to be able to sustain that from race to race to race, not do it for a couple of races, then disappear for a few and then come back. You know, if he's going to really sort of take on the leadership mantle of Alpine after Alonso, you know, calls time on his career, then he needs to be able to, you know, consistently put in those the string of performances. Obviously, you know, he's a Grand Prix winner, so he can do it when he's presented the opportunity. I just feel he needs to be more consistent at a good level, for that to really sort of happen. I think that if they put Gasly in that car, then we would see, because I mean, he is Mr. Consistent, you know. I mean, we saw last year with AlphaTauri, some absolutely brilliant drives, and he was just consistently best of the rest behind the top three sort of teams.
So qualifying, definitely, and also the racing comes a bit inconsistent.
There was a few where he sort of, you know, yeah, was kind of, oh, okay, but I think out of anyone, if they want like a successful French driver behind the wheel of that car, you know, Gasly and Ocon are probably the two best that they've got available out there at the moment. But we'll see. We'll see.
What are your, how are you feeling on Mick Schumacher? Where do you feel him?
Well, for me, Mick, I mean, I'm massively proud of the things that he's achieved. I think he's done things his own way from the junior categories. He's not, you know, he's trying his best not to lean on the Schumacher name. And I think he's an all round nice guy, and I think he is super talented. Whether or not now he's going to get a proper season of learning alongside an actually decent driver, because I'm not going to include Nikita Mazepin in that sentence. I think maybe he needs this year to establish himself now alongside an actual proper decent racing driver in Kevin Magnussen, who is going to push him now. Like, he's going to need to really push on. He's going to need to kick on for the rest of this season to, you know, bring himself up to that level. I would be massively disappointed if we don't see Mick Schumacher score points this year. And I think that would hurt his reputation in the paddock if he doesn't score. It's a difficult one, because in the second season, usually, you know, that's where you really sort of push on and get on, and that's what he's done in the other categories. But then,
Did he crash in the first weekend as well?
I know they had a number of hydraulics issues in the first weekend. There was a lot of car issues, which they then had more issues in practice. Obviously, I know, you know, the massive impact that he had at Jeddah, you know, has ended up costing Haas another $1 million in repairs, which is, you know, it's not going to help, because it does seem when Schumacher does crash the car, it is usually a big one. And it's usually very expensive. So, you know, I mean, the main thing is he's okay, but it still raises that question of, is he now pushing too hard too soon to try and match Kevin Magnussen, and is making more mistakes? Which, you know, I don't think he needs to do at this stage. I think he just needs to settle in and just get his eye in for the season, because the rest will just come naturally once you get used to the new style of car, and actually being able to look at data and everything of a more experienced teammate. I don't know. I'm on the fence. I really am excited to see him do well, but part of me is now a bit worried that he won't live up to the expectations that have been placed upon him. Which some are fair, some are unfair. Some, like, a lot of people compare him to his dad, which I don't think you can ever compare anyone to Michael. You know, despite him being the son, he's a spitting image of his dad, but I think he's got to be respected for his own driving. And at the moment, he was left high and dry in Bahrain with the tyre strategy that Haas made. They didn't pit him under the safety car, which was a shame, because if they'd pitted him, he probably had a chance at points. And then obviously, you know, round two, at Jeddah, he was the maker of his own demise. I just worry that, you know, if he starts making these mistakes on a more regular basis, that he might not make the grade. But, you know, I'm hoping for good things from Mick. I'm hoping he's going to come back bigger and stronger for the rest of the season, that's for sure.
Going to have a team that are a bit more and less cutthroat than a team like Red Bull. He probably will be given a bit more time than a team like Red Bull.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Haas will give him a lot more time. I mean, Red Bull are pretty cutthroat. I mean, how many drivers have we seen them just, you know, mid-season chop and change? you know, like you had your Kvyats, your Brendan Hartleys, eventually, you know, getting the axe, and
Gasly
as well. You know, I mean, look at him now flourishing compared to the Gasly we saw at Red Bull when he was axed. You know, it's, yeah, Red Bull very cutthroat with how their philosophy is towards sort of junior category drivers. I mean, there's been some that they've just terminated out of the academy and things over the years. And
Red Bull, at least they do give their junior drivers a chance. I mean, it's not consistently proven that if you want at least to go in F1, then you're probably your best bet in Red Bull Academy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I can't fault them, because I was trying to think back how many actual drivers they've given a chance in F1, and if you include obviously the Toro Rosso stable, which is basically Red Bull, well, AlphaTauri now as it is, but you know, we had Sebastian Buemi, John Eric Vernes, Jamie Alguersuarez, you know, the list of drivers that have come through and been given a go in F1 is long. It's probably one of the, if you look at it in terms of productivity of drivers making F1, Red Bull top of the crop. You know, they blow everyone else out the water with how they're structured. It's how harsh they are towards the drivers once they get there. But you know, F1 is a cutthroat business. You know, you either get results or you don't. Whether I agree with some of those decisions over the years, that probably leaves a lot to be desired, but, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Helmut Marko is a one of a kind man, and.
Certainly not medium.
Huh?
He's certainly not medium to train the time at Marko.
No, well, yeah.
Or even for others, medium training. Talking about Red Bull drivers, do you think Tsunoda will last beyond this year?
This is an interesting take. So, I firmly believe that this year is make or break for Yuki Tsunoda. Last year, we saw flashes of pace, but hugely inconsistent, and he did have a tendency to crash.
Mm-hmm.
And even he, it was quite, I found it quite funny when he himself come out and said he was surprised to get a contract for this year. And I just, you know, that's not the sort of thing that as a team principal, I'd want my driver to be saying, but you know, I guess following the incidents he was involved in, it kind of makes sense. And this year, I mean, he's been unlucky with mechanical problems. You know, Jeddah was a write-off for the poor lad. I mean, he got out to go on his, like, lap round to the grid and the car just packed up on him. I mean, it's such a shame. But I think this is the year now with how Red Bull traditionally are. This year, especially with, like you mentioned already, Liam Lawson and everyone coming through. He needs to show something special now for this year, I think, to be kept in the program. The only way I see him staying is if Gasly moves to another team and then they will keep him alongside, say, Liam Lawson, or De Ruvola.
It's the future Perez, like, Perez might be in danger of the cut last year. Do you think they've become a bit soft in terms of how cutthroat they are? With the season Perez and outside the academy, it happens to be more lenient than the academy drivers. Do not think that affects them at all.
Yeah, Perez is an interesting one because obviously his contract is also up at the end of the year. And Helmut Marko is saying, obviously, that they're going to evaluate, as he always says every year, we're going to evaluate, you know, the drivers and where they're at. I think, you know, I would be surprised if Perez wasn't renewed because he is playing the role of a good number two driver, which when you look at Red Bull previously, you know, Mark Webber didn't like the idea of being a number two driver and that caused some, you know, awkward tensions. And then obviously Danny Ric as well moved on. He didn't want to be, you know, playing second fiddle and stuff. But Perez seems to be quite content driving for a bigger team and picking up the results when he can. Is, you know, I don't know. I would like to see Perez stay there and get a proper go at it, but I just think anyone that goes there alongside Max Verstappen is going to have to make do with being a number two driver. The only way that's going to change is if all of a sudden you've got another Max Verstappen coming through the junior ranks. So I don't know. I think if I was Red Bull, I'd probably play it safe and keep Perez. But we've seen Red Bull do some stranger things over the years. So, you know, watch this space, I guess.
Valentino Rossi in the cup.
Sorry, but...
Valentino Rossi in the cup.
Valentino obviously is not racing in MotoGP, so, you know. And he's driven an F1 car a number of times before. So,
okay, Red Bull. I don't hear her.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think Rossi would have to drop the Monster Energy drink sponsorship first before he before he comes across.
A lot of people have been moving from Mercedes, not just the Austin moving. Maybe the sponsors will start moving as well. To the great Christian Horner, we can attract so many sponsors with his calm and loving nature.
Yeah. Calm and loving nature, I love it. I don't know. There's a lot of things that, I don't know if, do you know a guy called Engine Mode 11 on Twitter and YouTube? So he's a friend of ours, Dan Drury, who raced in the F1 championship we did online. He obviously is a former Red Bull senior engineer, and his take on Red Bull is quite interesting sometimes, really, really quite fascinating. It's, you know, kind of how the dynamic is in the team and how the things have operated, how intense it can be working in the same sort of building as your sort of your Adrian Newey's and everything else. I mean, you know, Red Bull give it the image of they are the, you know, the sort of the fun team to be in, but you know, under the pressure and the pressure cooker that is Formula One, the, you know, in the actual sort of factories now, it's a different world from what we see on the outside looking in. But you know, I also think Red Bull are a lot more, you know, despite what we see and what the public see, I think Red Bull are, for an energy drinks firm, they are probably, looking at the staff and everything, they're probably one of the most professional outfits you've got on the grid.
Every year, for example, isn't it?
Yeah.
Definitely very good in all those sort of areas. I think on the team, we mentioned them earlier, as we're sort of going through the drivers and sort of where we think they are. So a big standout name this year in terms of performance has been Danny Ric. You saw him with Alpine, but you know, before how he sort of had a decent first season when he really kicked on in that second season. Things just haven't seemed to click for him this season. It's only been two races, so we are jumping the gun, but if he does carry on with the same trajectory, he could lose his seat. He's not the Danny Ric where he was so secure in Formula One that he could sort of move around these teams, maybe moving around all these teams and trying to find a good car. He's got worse than driver himself.
This is a driver that, I don't know, just absolutely leaves me feeling gutted, because when he was at Red Bull, he was exciting. He was last of the late breakers. We were seeing some fantastic stuff.
Red Bull that year and his last year. It was sort of a debate between Verstappen and him. Like, people were telling Ricciardo over Verstappen, because I remember he won in China when he won that race in Monaco where the car broke or something and he kept behind Hamilton. And people were sort of thinking, oh, we should go with Ricciardo over Verstappen. That's how sort of good he was.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with Ricciardo. He just hasn't been the same since Red Bull. He's, like you say, he's jumping around trying to find, you know, a car that's going to give him a world championship. And obviously this year, the McLaren is looking far, far from what it did last year. It hasn't helped that he was, you know, he's missed a large chunk of pre-season testing with COVID. He just hasn't looked, I don't know, he just hasn't looked quite the same. And then he's had the reliability issues out in the car compared to Lando. It's just, everything seems to go against the man. I don't know if he's like cursed or something like that, but he's certainly struggling. And, you know, how long will a team like McLaren continue in that vein? I know he won a race last year. I'm not taking that away from him because he drove superbly at Monza. Yeah, it's a really good drive. But are we seeing that kind of Monza performance that we should be seeing from him race in, race out? No, we're not. And this year, again, he's still looking a bit all at sea with where he is in the car. I think I'd want to reevaluate Danny Ricciardo about the halfway point this season. I think if by halfway he's still massively struggling compared to Lando as McLaren boss, I would be keeping a keen eye on the driver market to see who might be becoming available that you could probably bring in to replace him. And that's harsh because, you know, there's no doubt that Danny Ric has got talent, but I'm not seeing it at the moment. As much as I love the guy and I love his, you know, his personality on the grid, because he is one of the characters of Formula One, you know, he does a lot for, you know, enhancing the image of Formula One with how he is. But are we seeing enough from him, a multiple Grand Prix winner at the moment on the F1 grid? And the answer is, for me, no. And I hope it changes. I hope next race he, you know, in Australia, the Honey Badger makes a return and, you know, proves us all wrong. But at the moment, I'm not seeing enough from him to say that he would be a standout signing for any team on that grid.
Yeah, I mean, other than sort of the name, the reputation in itself has gone down, but it doesn't help when you're in a car. I mean, McLaren, they've not had the greatest start to the season either. None of the Mercedes engines have. I'm not saying necessarily it's Mercedes engines, but I mean, what was it? They were all in the last positions or something. Or they didn't. There was some stat that they were occupying last positions or something in one of the races. Yeah, that had never happened before in their history of being an engine manager. That's one that's pretty crazy. So.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic because obviously the Mercedes engine used to be, you know, the engine. That was the one that everyone aspired to have. But then you look at the cars this year that are all in the lower half of the grid and they're pretty much all Mercedes powered. Which, you know, naturally it's going to raise questions about that Mercedes power plant. You know, where has it gone wrong? You know, where we see obviously Ferrari have had a few years of struggle with their engine after the whole sort of fuel flow sensor thing got found out and all that kind of rubbish. But then this year, Ferrari seemed to have produced a really solid power plant. The Red Bull Honda one, despite its reliability issues, when it's working, is, you know, really fast, as we've seen in the speed data for the various tracks. You know, the Red Bull car has often had the top speed by quite some margin. The only thing they've got to work out is their reliability woes.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose Red Bull, unlikely to be ever supplying anyone else another team with engines due to them having AlphaTauri on their roster. Mercedes, I agree there's probably questions to be raised about engine manufacturers. But at the same time, if you look at Aston Martin, so ever since, as you said, and they were sort of that whole pink Mercedes thing has sort of gone downhill since then. I mean, Lawrence Stroll said that, this rebranding Aston Martin was to be this big project, and they would be investing more money in it, the backing of a big name. You have to say it's not been the greatest of successes, really, overall. There's been a few good races like that Baku result with Vettel in a few races, but overall, really been that impressive, especially this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think Mercedes has been, not Mercedes, well, the Mercedes powered Aston Martin. I think they have been hugely underwhelming. For all the money that Lawrence Stroll is throwing around by building a new facility and, signing Sebastian Vettel and, I know he's got his son in the car, Lance, which, occasionally Lance shows some really good pace before disappearing again, which, there's a lot of drivers that are like that. They haven't taken the steps forward that you would expect given the amount of money that's been invested, and everything that's gone on around that team to take it from where it was as Force India to where they are now. If anything, they seem to have taken a backward step compared to where Force India left off. And Force India, were operating on a much smaller budget than what they've got now. I don't know. I'm worried that, you see, my main concern when anyone like, a multi-billionaire comes in and buys a Formula One team, my worry is that as soon as they have a couple of years of results not going their way and not automatically going up there and winning races, how quickly they will lose interest and then try to sell the team on. That, I know he's got a big investment in Aston Martin because he's also, got the road car side of things to think about. But, for a name like Aston Martin as a manufacturer team now, as they are, it's the results are awful. They've not shown me anything this year that gives me any great confidence that they're going to come back up the grid without a major redesign. There was an interesting story that came out of the paddock from I think they are now a former engineer who's quit, but someone who was working in the paddock for them in the pit team, John Pulsaman, he found this story. I do have a link to it somewhere. I'll have to go back through and find it. But they want this engineer after Bahrain, because obviously Bahrain, Aston Martin had both cars out in Q1. They didn't make it through Q1. Lawrence Stroll apparently is reportedly said to have come down to the garage and had a go at all of the pit crew and everyone in the garages, telling them what an awful job they were doing and, just basically grilling them for going out in Q1. Now, fine, as a team principal, if you want to grill your team, then fine. However, if the car is inherently bad, there's no point having a go at the pit crew and the drivers, because if the car is inherently bad, it's bad. It doesn't just get better with you having a go at them about it. You need to go and have that discussion with your chief designer and technical team and find out where the design went wrong, because all through pre-season, Aston Martin were giving it the big one and saying that how well their car was performing and, on the simulation data and all that kind of stuff. And lo and behold, we get to the first race and it's awful. It doesn't seem like it's a team based on if there is truth to that story from this disgruntled, now ex-engineer or whoever they are. If that turns out to be true, then I would say that, morale and everything in that team is not going to be the best either. And if you lose morale, you lose the performance of your team largely, because what's the point? If you're going to be had a go at day in, day out, you kind of start thinking, what's the point? But, you know, I'm hoping, you know, I'm hoping it's just been exaggerated. I'm hoping it's not like that. I'm hoping that, you know, there's a bit more support in there. But if it's to be believed, then it would say that Lawrence Stroll is kind of ruling through sort of here, I guess, how he's made his billions in life as it is, you know, just with tenacity and cutthroat sort of, you know, attitudes.
Alex Ferguson in football, but this is absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose you can move on to sort of previewing the Australian Grand Prix, unless there's anything else you sort of think you've missed out.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything we've particularly missed out. I think, you know, I'm really excited for Australia. It's been a couple of years now since we had an Australian Grand Prix. Mm. Obviously, you know, global pandemic and all that stuff. But this year we've got a redesigned track, which is much more flowing and faster. They've got rid of some of the intricacies of the track, which personally, I'm a little bit gutted about, because they were some of my favourite bits to actually drive on, like, you know, the F1 games and the Sims. And they're saying that it's going to encourage overtaking, which I hope it does. But where they've made some of the corners, I don't know how to put it, they've made them more into sweeping corners rather than acute tight corners. It kind of removes that kind of that braking zone into those corners, which could have potentially been an overtaking chance. We will see. Obviously, you know, this is the first changes they've really made to the Albert Park track since it came on the calendar back in 1996. I'm hopeful that we're going to see it work, because if it works, I think Albert Park will stay on the calendar. If it doesn't work, I think they might have to look at sort of alternative options going forwards. But then where would you put the Australian Grand Prix, if at all? I mean, because I know they're on about rejigging some of the races on the calendar to fit in some newer venues, you know, like Las Vegas is coming next year now. We've also got this year. What have we got this year? Miami this year, isn't it?
Yeah. Why don't we just add another one there? Because we've not got enough one.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, we've got Miami after Australia. I'm looking forward to that, as well. I'm not too keen on these, you know, these sort of half street track, half racetrack sort of things. Doesn't really tick the boxes for me personally, but, you know, I'm reserved on judgment until I see it in action. But yeah, Australia, looking forward to it. I want to see Danny Ric have a good race. You know, home race. I think if there's any place where, you know, the motivation to get your head down and change your fortunes, it's going to be your home Grand Prix. But more so, I want to see the battle between Leclerc and Max Verstappen continue, because so far it has been giving us some fantastic racing on the TV, you know, and I hope upon hope that it continues in that vein. And obviously, you know, Mr. Consistent, Carlos Sainz as well, that can't forget him. He's been doing a great job so far. I want to see a Carlos Sainz first win though. That's the thing. I want to see Carlos Sainz get his first Grand Prix win.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Who are you tipping for the Australian Grand Prix? That's the thing. Who are you sort of thinking is going to get this one?
Nikita Mazepin.
Yeah. He's going to make a stunning return, ousting Max Verstappen for the lead Red Bull seat. You heard it here first.
Exactly. Who would I tip to be... you know what? I am gonna go with the easy choice is Charles Leclerc or Max Verstappen, isn't it? I think probably gonna be one of those two. But as you just mentioned them, I'll go with Sainz and I think I'll go with Verstappen on pole, Leclerc and Brit.
Oh, okay, yeah. I mean, you know, Max is, I mean, we see how aggressive he is in the races. What I'm liking this year and what excites me for, you know, Australia and basically every race is that Leclerc isn't afraid of Verstappen. You know, he's not afraid to go wheel to wheel with him and play those games, you know, like at Jeddah when Verstappen at the safety car was like right up alongside Leclerc. So Leclerc just drove straight on at the corner and put Max out on the marbles. I thought that was genius. Absolutely genius. You know, it's like, well, you can compromise me for my line, but I'll just hang you out here then instead. It was just, and these games, these mind games and everything else, they just add an extra element. And, you know, Australia is traditional for having a few safety cars. So, you know, there's that to think about as well. I'm just excited, mate. I just think this year is a truly exciting year for Formula One. I think this is what we've been waiting for quite some time. Yeah. You know, we're finally getting it. You know, we're getting that racing that we've so badly wanted. I can't hide my excitement. I am genuinely excited to see it.
Of the year as well, so Hülkenberg finally got relieved with that new car, so he came out and said recently that he's keen but not desperate to return to Formula One. Maybe that's also stumbling around the back of the field in that Aston Martin.
I want to get there now. Like, I want to be there. I want to see practice kicking off and, you know, be doing my watch-alongs and, Australia has always, I mean, Australia for me was always the traditional start of an F1 season, because it's kind of what I grew up with. I miss it as the opening race of Formula One, I think, but, you know, I'm glad it's back. I'm hoping that, I think, you know, I want to see Mick as well actually get his name off the marker and actually get some points. Those are my hopes anyway for Australia. I think that's probably
where will Hamilton finish?
Ooh, Hamilton. I mean, Australia hasn't been the kindest racetrack to Hamilton ever. I still think he's going to be outplaced by Russell. I think Russell's going to have him here again. I think Hamilton probably looking at a P6 finish, I think, with Russell just ahead of him.
That'd be a good result if they got P6 and P5 from the field at this moment in time.
Yeah, it sounds weird to be saying Mercedes P5 and P6, but yeah, I think Russell is settling in better with the car. I just think Russell's being more consistent. Obviously Mercedes forgot to call Hamilton into the pit lane last time at Jeddah as well. And they told him as he was driving past the pits to come in. Yeah. And it was like, seriously, guys, how have you got that wrong? You know, you're 8-time world champions. You should be sort of on the button with that kind of stuff. I think George is looking pretty strong. I think we're starting to see the changing of the guard now. I think, you know, Hamilton's had his prime and peak years.
Hamilton, Vettel, Alonso, these sort of guys.
Yeah, I think they're coming into the end of their careers. I genuinely believe that. You know, I think we're seeing these younger guys now, these exciting talents that are, you know, taking over. Because everyone was a bit on the fence when Leclerc joined Ferrari, but that went very well because he suddenly blasted Vettel out of the water. You know, we're seeing George now starting to, I wouldn't say make Mercedes his own, but he's got to work and getting on with the job at hand. You know, Red Bull has obviously got Max, and there's just so many young drivers that are out there now coming through that are quite exciting, and I want to see behind the wheel of F1 cars, and hopefully it continues a bit, because, you know, there's obviously been a few years where F1's struggled to bring through junior category drivers into the world of Formula One. I know we've only got the one proper rookie this year in Joe, but you know, there's looking at Formula 2 as it is, there's a lot of exciting drivers there as well waiting in the wings. And I don't know, I think it's, you know, with the golden oldies, as I'm going to call them, you know, approaching the latter part of their careers, there's going to be a lot of seats becoming available.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, even if you could, maybe with these budget caps, that might encourage a few more teams potentially. I mean, you look at Ineos, who sponsored Mercedes, they've certainly got quite a lot of runners. Making their own teams. Rich Energy, of course, making their own teams. There could be a few open for a few more teams. It would be nice to see a few more drivers getting a shot at F1.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's rumoured to be Andretti coming into Formula One at some point, you know, with a bid for the sort of one of the vacant slots has been made, but we haven't really heard too much more since. I'm hoping that comes to some sort of reality, because then that's an extra two seats on the grid, you know.
Yeah, we've been asking, we've got Mario Andretti on the podcast, that was pretty good scout a while back.
Yeah, Mario. You know, because he was the one who sort of dropped the bombshell on Twitter, wasn't he, Mario? He just kind of just put it out there, and it was like, wow, Andretti making a bid for F1? What? Like, you know, that perked up the ears. I was like, this is fantastic. to get such a big American name back in sort of the F1 world. Yeah, I'm all for it, frankly. Yeah, give me some more of that, and hopefully we'll see something come of it, because there's some great drivers in you know, even in IndyCar that could be given a shot at F1, you know. There's all possibilities. But yeah, you know, obviously the one thing I want to see as well is, it's the first race of the season for Sebastian Vettel at Australia. I want to see what he can do in that Aston Martin. I don't know. I'm on the fence. I don't see that he's going to pull anything out that Stroll or Hülkenberg haven't. But, you know, I'm open to being surprised.
Well, let's hope so. Vettel, a few so years, I mean, I've never been that a fan of him as a driver. But, yeah, I think we could move on to sort of one of the big talking points in the round Formula 1 at the moment is Drive to Survive. See, Lipsky said that season 4 is doing the best numbers ever without performing season 3 or whatever, but quite a lot of controversy is like, you know, Max Verstappen not doing it, and the drivers talking about the fake drama and they creating it. Do you think that'll be another season of Drive to Survive? Or maybe do you think this will be their last year doing Drive to Survive?
Yeah, you see, now, when Drive to Survive first came out, I was a massive fan. Like, the first season, I thought was great, and it still has the highest rating figures out of any of their series that they've done so far. But this last season of it, yeah, I get where the drivers are coming from. You know, the sort of inclusion of driver radio clips and things that certain drivers have said about, you know, completely different drivers, but they've changed it so as it's like linking in. The primary candidate is the Lando Norris and Danny Rick, where they took an audio grab of something Lando had said, and they put it as if it was creating this fake rivalry between Lando and Danny Rick, and it almost made them out to sound like, you know, bad people. And it was like, well, hang on a minute. That radio clip that they used as Lando wasn't about Danny Rick, though. In reality, that radio clip was about Lance Stroll in the Aston Martin cutting across in front of him. I know the FIA are having a chat or a meeting with the Drive to Survive sort of producers and all that kind of stuff. I think whether we get another season is going to depend on what comes out of that meeting. If they can't agree on the creative direction of where this, you know, if you're going to call it a docu-series, then it needs to be true to what's really going on with the sport. Chopping and changing it to make out these different events that never actually happened, that's where I draw the line, because it's not given a true representation of what was going on in Formula One at the time.
Yeah.
And I don't like all that, you know, that kind of not made up stuff. Well, it is made up stuff. I don't kind of like it when they kind of exaggerate things and that, you know, like F1 is a gripping sport enough as it is. And they've got all the behind the scenes access. You know, I'm sure it would be just as riveting to continue with the actual realistic representation of the sport rather than dramatizing it. You know, based on how the last season of Drive to Survive is, I wouldn't miss it if they didn't make a next series. Mm. That's yeah. where I am on it. I wouldn't miss it.
Yeah. And have you watched the whole of season 4? I've only seen that 2 episodes.
Yeah, I watched it through, but I'll be honest. When I lost a large part of interest when it was. There's only one way to put it. It was out of sync. So you would have one episode doing Monaco, and then you'd go to the next episode, which was before Monaco, and it's not in chronological order here. Like, why? I know you're trying to tell the story of a different team for different episodes, but try and keep that chronological order of the calendar in some semblance, because otherwise it starts to become a bit disjointed. It'd be like reading a book and then you get 3 chapters in and then you read the intro. You know, it's like, well, hang on a minute. Well, surely I've just read the intro. But, you know, it's got a lot of improvements to make. I think some of the stuff they do is fantastic, like the access they get and, you know, some of the footage and everything is brilliant. I just think they need to just go back to the drawing board, take stock of what's good and what they've done right, because there's a lot that they have done right. And they just need to get rid of that inane thing where they have to dramatize it because it's being made for a wider audience. I mean, one of the massive positives I will say that Drive to Survive has done is it has brought a lot of new fans to the sport. You know, people that wouldn't otherwise have been F1 fans or watched F1 on, you know, F1 TV or whatever it is that you watch it on, Sky Sports. You know, it's done a lot to bring kind of, I don't want to call it, but the Netflix generation has introduced them to the world of F1. And yeah. I think, you know, that is never a negative, keeping the fan base growing for a sport such as Formula One. That's never a negative. I just think they need to be careful about the way they go about it. If it continues in its current vein, I don't know if I'd watch it again, personally. But if they can give some assurances that they will rectify the issues that have been raised by the drivers, the teams and, you know, the officials, then, yeah, I'm willing to give them another chance. I'm willing to give them a go.
Yeah, yeah. I think that you're right. They have brought in sort of this new generation of fans. But then I think, as you said, like, will their view of the intricacies of how Formula One works be sort of skewed by the going on in the series of being incorrect? Like, maybe they won't view Lando Norris, for example, in the same way. Or
yeah.
And what I mean. Or, because I think I've had a lot of people think this year's quite biased towards Hamilton in the sense that there's no sort of match has happened, it's just Hamilton talking about it, so you don't get both sides of the story.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're onto something there as well, because obviously if say, for instance, you and I were just coming into the world of Formula One and the first thing we've watched is Netflix and it's labelled as a documentary series, we're going to take what we see there as, wow, this is okay, so that's what these guys are really like, you know, and we might come in with a you know, an absolute dislike for Lando Norris versus Daniel Ricciardo, when in reality, it isn't like that. So it will skew your perception of what each driver is like and what rivalries are in the sport, because especially if you're watching something that's kind of been faked, because at the time you won't know any different until you start watching the sport and see it for real. But by then, is it too late? You know, has that opinion already been ingrained inside of people? This is how they are. That's the sort of stuff they need to they need to sort out. You know, because I don't like the idea of drivers coming in and getting unnecessary hate for no good reason when it's not true. You know, I don't think it's a fair thing to sort of put upon the drivers when they're under enough pressure as it is from the world's media, let alone this sort of stuff inciting kind of the toxicity we see on social media and things like that. It all plays, you know, a wider part of how the sport is perceived. Hopefully, you know, touch wood, and I don't have anything wood here to touch, but touch wood, that these discussions and these meetings that they're holding with the producers, they can sort it out and, you know, come to some sort of agreement and understanding of let's stop all the rubbish and let's get on with, you know, F1, because ultimately that's what we want to see. We want to see F1 stuff, you know. Hopefully, I'm hopeful, because I don't think they're not, you know, I don't think F1 management and co, I don't think they're not going to want Drive to Survive, because it does a lot for them in marketing and brand awareness and everything else, which equals ticket sales and merchandise sales and all that kind of stuff. So I think they're definitely going to look at ways they can work to, you know, keep the working relationship there. But we'll see.
I mean, they definitely don't know, just because of the exposure that Formula One is getting. I think probably all these, I mean, so Hamilton before was definitely like sort of a megastar, but like guys like maybe slightly lesser known, like Valtteri Bottas, who's even become, you know, pretty big now, and you know, drivers like this probably as a result of Drive to Survive.
Yeah.
And I think sort of all we'll wrap it up there, unless you've got sort of anything else you
want to add? No, I think we've sort of touched on a lot of good subjects there, and that, you know, the main thing is that we're in for another weekend of good racing. You know, this season's already showing us that, and
Early Grand Prix starts early night on Saturday night.
Yeah, what time? I don't even know what time the Grand Prix starts this weekend, so I might need to check that out. I don't think I've got too many grumbles or anything else about the world of F1 right now. I think we're heading in a good direction, and just looking forward to this weekend now. It's the next step. So
definitely. And where can everyone find you who's listening, Steve? What are your platforms you might plug?
Well, thank you. So I produce content on YouTube under my Pro Dragonfire gamertag. And I also do live streams on Twitch as well, including the F1 watch alongs that I've kind of mentioned a little bit. And we do also, the last one I will mention is the PPF1 podcast. You'll find us on YouTube under PPF1. And that is just me and John Pulsarman, Sweeney, doing a podcast after every race. We've done a bit of off-season stuff, but, the next one should be up just after Australia, which, you know, hopefully we'll get you involved in as well, mate, and, you know, get some guest appearances going.
I'll leave all, try and find all those links and put them in the episode notes. But I've really enjoyed our little chat today. I mean, as I said, hopefully we can do some more stuff in the future. If you did enjoy this one, guys, please do leave a nice rating. It does help a lot, and doesn't take much time to do, and it's free. So make sure you do that, and have a great week, everyone. Stay safe, and bye-bye.